Welcome to Irish Illustrated Insider, brought to you by Catanzari Financial Services and Anderson, Augustino, and Keller. I am Tim Priester with Tim O'Malley and Pete Sampson. It is Thursday. We are how many days away from a football game now? Less than 2 weeks. And Notre Dame is finishing up final exams here this week. They'll start practicing on Saturday. We have a media day, a full-blown media day, including assistant coaches on Saturday. And we're going to get more into Notre Dame Clemson with our questions. We're going to have a extended segment with questions. Our first segment's going to be a little bit shorter. We're going to go over our predictions from this year. We hinted that the other day. We said O'Malley is really good at it, and he is.
Only for one side.
Yeah, well, we were fairly close. I mean, I was 11-1 straight up because I took Michigan. Both these guys were 12-0, which makes it me very interested to see what you're going to pick for the Cotton Bowl. Against the spread, Sampson was 5-6-1. This was the spread that I would use in my preview, so it was the last one before I posted a preview. O'Malley was 4-6-2. He had a couple pushes, and I was actually 4-7-1. O'Malley separated himself with the opposing offenses against Notre Dame defense.
All that film study.
Yeah, Clark Lee kind of made that
easy for us. He made it easy on me. Pick 17 a lot, and you're okay.
Yeah, and actually, we were all right around there. I said O'Malley had 8 games where he picked within 3 points of the opponent. I actually had 9. Pete had 1, 2, 3, 4, and a 4-point game. So it was easy with Clark Lee.
Notre Dame, scoring, just fooled us a few times, huh?
Well,
in both directions.
I mean, in each case, our worst pick was Ball State.
Yeah, that was their. That doesn't count. That was their worst pick too. Notre Dame.
I don't know. I
mean, that's Notre Dame's fault.
Look,
because they didn't practice
that. Yeah, I didn't know they were going to practice.
Shocking. I mean, my Ball State pick was bad. I had them winning 52-9. But in some way, I'm not sure if that was my worst pick because it's a toss up between Notre Dame 41, Syracuse 27.
Well, I have those written down here too, Pete.
Notre Dame 45, USC 10. I mean, both of those are, it's like, I feel like those are, even though I got the winner correct, it was similar to when I picked Alabama to win by 10 points in the national championship game. Like, I got the winner correct, but really the spirit of the pick was off.
What, before USC, what was the other one you said?
Syracuse 41, Notre Dame beating Syracuse 41-27.
Oh, well, I have a different bad one for you. It was 42-13 against Pitt, so.
Oh, yeah, it was bad.
Yeah, my Pitt was my
Wake
worst.
Forest, Notre Dame 33, Wake Forest 31 was not good, although I think that may have been made with Brandon Wimbush starting at quarterback, so I can maybe let myself off.
All right. Well, the worst pick of all was mine because I picked Michigan to beat Notre Dame 24-20.
So Tim and I are definitely off the hook.
I was close in.
I think my best Notre Dame.
I have your best too.
Syracuse 37 is really good because he missed an extra point on me. That's not cool.
Yeah, and you also had O'Malley had 31-20. Wait, no, you had
31-21 for Northwestern. No, I had 30-20 for Northwestern.
30-20, and the final was 31-21. My best pick was actually Northwestern. I had 30-17, and it was 31-21.
41-16 Pitt. That's mine.
Wow, yeah, we were all. I was closer on Pitt, but I had Syracuse scoring 31, which was.
I look at this, and I think Northwestern is the only pick that I look at and be like, yeah, that was kind of close. I had Notre Dame 27, Northwestern 13. Vanderbilt, like, but I didn't think the way the Vanderbilt game ended, it was more like 27-26.
I got you. You had 27-14, and it was 22-17.
Yeah. I definitely did not predict a blowout, which I think was sort of a popular pick as a response to Ball State.
Right. I had 26-17, and I did not think they were going to almost win Vanderbilt. I just figured it'd be sleepy.
No, and the point differential in picking Notre Dame's point total by game, I was within 142. O'Malley was 143.
Yeah,
I know. And Sampson was 160. And then the point differential with the opponent, O'Malley was at 54, Priester at 59, Sampson with 81.
You don't believe in Notre Dame's defense enough, Pete.
You also had 26-17 with Vanderbilt. I understand it didn't.
I felt like it was going to be a very sleepy. Yeah. That was a preseason pick, too. I just felt like no matter what, that's a hard game to care about.
Yeah. I had Notre Dame 31-20 over Stanford is 38-17. So I was within 10.
I had a
1-point
game.
I had Notre Dame 31-17 over USC, and it was about to be 24-10, which would have been a 14-point spread. But we were in a ballpark. I mean, I think we represent ourselves pretty well.
We look like we might cover the team. I think Pitt was the worst, right? Because the spirit of it, we were making fun of Pitt.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Pitt was hot garbage.
Yeah, well, like USC, we acknowledged something could conceivably happen. We just didn't think it would. Pitt, I never considered.
I said Pitt was garbage, but I had my score was at least a little bit closer than you guys.
I will say Alan Wazalewski from the basketball squad came up to me before the game and said, "Nobody thinks this is going to be close. You guys made me so nervous." And turns out,
he was right. And you know what I said to him about that? Jerry Faust won at USC. So please, don't tell me about how it happens all the time. All right, that's an abbreviated segment number one. We'll be back with two full pages of questions from our readers.
The college football playoffs are here, and getting tickets online can be far too complicated. With hundreds of sites and varying levels of reliability, it's hard to know who to trust. That's why SeatGeek is the way to go. SeatGeek pulls millions of tickets into one place so you can easily find the seats you want for a price you're willing to pay. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. By searching multiple ticket sites and grading every ticket based on value, SeatGeek helps you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to ticket source for everything from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, Irish Illustrated listeners get $10 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code IRISH today. That's promo code IRISH for $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek, life's an event. We have the tickets.
Irish Illustrated listeners get $10 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code IRISH today. That's promo code IRISH in all caps for $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Our first question for segment two comes from Packy P. Is Kyren Williams a back that can come in and play next year?
I mean, he's doing early enrollment, so I think that puts him on even footing with Jameer Smith and Sebo Flemister from the second he steps on campus, because it's not like those guys have done anything this season to sort of, you know, carve out a, I am the third back, or I got a chance to be the second back. So, you know, could he get 25 carries for the season, 50 carries for the season? You know, could he fall into the four-game redshirt rule? Yeah, but I'm guessing Packy P's question here is more about, can he be a guy who plays like 10 games? Like, can he have a season like, you know, maybe a notch below Jafar Armstrong? I don't think so. I like him as a player. I think that people in the recruiting industry probably like him more than I like him. I think he's got a pretty unique sort of body type. He's like a quick back but squat. He's an interesting player, and I think he can sort of do the things in the passing game that they have just started to do with Dexter Williams from the very beginning. But he's undersized. I don't know how he's going to pick up anybody as a blocker, as a true freshman, let alone just sort of know how to do it. But I think he is a guy that will fit into Notre Dame's program incredibly, incredibly well. And considering some of the issues they've had in the running back room over the last few years, there's a real benefit to that.
So there's six. I'm not missing a guy, am I? Because Jafar and Tony Jones are the 1-2 punch next year. So is it Avery Davis developing still would be the default? I know he's been out of the mix for a long time now, but developing still would be the default number three right now? Or are you thinking Jameer Smith?
No, I mean, I think Avery Davis is still in the mix. And he's the, of all of those backs, he's the one that's probably closest to Kyren Williams in terms of size and
style, so
he has the edge right there.
Kyren is, I think, thicker than Avery Davis, by a lot.
Yeah.
But, you know, in terms of what they imagine them to be capable of doing, I think that's right.
I haven't looked at it. As soon as the postseason's over here is when I'll start getting really back into a lot of the senior film of these guys. Mm-hmm. And I think clearly he's improved, but I've leaned towards what Pete just said, that I didn't have him ranked as high as a lot of the recruiting people did after his junior season.
I guess it does come down to me for how much Avery Davis improves going the next 9 months. And he does have a leg up, obviously, on Williams. But I think Jameer Smith is a different runner than those guys. If he becomes the guy they like, he's number three. But I think they want the versatility of Avery Davis. And Sebo Flemister has some attention to detail issues. We're told that he's got to get out of. But he has the athletic ability, but he's not. He didn't do it himself any good.
They have a nice cross-section of backs now where Smith and Flemister are bigger, powerful guys. And they don't usually have something like that. Tony Jones is similar as well.
With Kyren Williams in early, one of those three guys better be careful. Sebo Flemister, Jameer Smith, and Avery Davis. You got to have a good spring. DOC Irish, if all the commits sign next week, does Notre Dame close the book on the 2019 class, or might they try to make room for more in February, i.e. Foskey Turner?
Well, they will definitely try to. I mean, Foskey, I think, is a guy that they are counting on getting closer to the signing day.
I agree.
And Turner's too good to pass up. Mm-hmm. Now, how they make room for that, we don't know. We don't know the attrition of the current freshman class.
Right.
After this season. So,
and the current senior class.
Yes, exactly. So they won't be done. They should sign everybody that's already verbally committed next week. And Foskey and Turner are definite takes, and I think they feel really good about getting Foskey. Pete?
I agree with you on Foskey. I think the numbers are the most important thing here, right? And you look at next year's roster, just sort of an early projection, I would think that Brandon Wimbush will go somewhere else. Devin Sudsoe will leave. Right, if you include Love, Claypool, Aquara, like all those guys back, and they get Foskey, that puts them at 90 scholarship players, which is like probably one more than they're comfortable with. But that one more is a defensive end. I mean, this was something that I asked Brian Kelly about. I think the week after Michigan, whereas based on how the Michigan game played out, where you've got Aquara, Kareem, Winovich, Gary, you look at that and say like, we need to oversign at defensive end. He's like, yes, and always. Corner.
Always
get one extra guy at those spots. So I think Foskey is that one extra guy. Then they can make it. It will work out later. They have some options there that they're trying to keep sort of under the radar for now. But I think probably once next Wednesday comes around, it will be a little bit more obvious.
I don't expect four dismissals this January like they had last year, obviously, because two are already in the works at this point, with Holmes and Stefferson are right around this point from the mall. So three were like clear disciplinary dismissals plus Tiasem. And then two, there were a lot of fifth-year senior candidates, which is probably part of why Watkins and Jay Hayes left, and we'll get to that later in these questions. But you figure one of those guys even. I mean, you're going to lose. You always lose pre-spring, in-spring, and post-spring. And then it comes down to something along the lines of what happens to you in the summer, and then there's the medical in August. So once you're at, 90 is probably one more, but that's only one more they care about, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I know that talking to Brian Polian about this in the summer, it was like they wanted to be more aggressive with, and something I asked Brian Kelly about at signing day last year, is like, I think they finally got to the point where over-signing isn't some, like, toxic word, because they don't run the guys out of school, but if you're not meeting whatever standards or traits that they like to hold up, you can stay and graduate.
Right. Yeah.
But they're just going to take that scholarship and put it back in the pile with the 85.
That's so easy to do with the upperclassmen.
Yes.
Yes. You can't do that with the lowerclassmen because then you can't.
Right.
Their scholarship has to be with them.
Yeah. Then you get into the Holmes situation, right. McIntosh situation. I mean, those are guys that are legitimately kicked out of school. All right. Next question. ND Fan 1 RAA, which freshmen have burned a year of eligibility so far?
There are a total of seven. Jason Adam Miola, Kevin Austin, Bo Bauer, Tariq Bracey, Houston Griffith, Paul Moala, and Shane Simon. I don't think I missed anybody there. There are two guys with three that have played three games, so they can't play
in both games.
They can't play in both games.
Are you laughing at Pete?
And that would be
the Myron Tagovailoa situation.
Jarrett Patterson, offensive tackle, and then Jason Adamiola's twin brother, Justin, who's also played in three games. Everybody else,
two or less. Yep.
Yeah, two or less. I mean, the odds of somebody, one of those freshmen playing the next two games, obviously, are steep. But that's the whole idea. You leave yourself that kind of wiggle room. with this new rule.
Basically, you watched a lot of Notre Dame, other than Paul Mawala, because he's all special teams. You know who they are.
Yeah, exactly.
Bill Bowery's out there all the time, stuff like that.
Exactly. At training underscore Dave, what other team, pro or college, do you wish you could have covered over the past 30 years? Samson's not old enough to have covered for 30 years, but O'Malley and I are. I understand where you're coming from there, training Dave. Who comes to mind? Who would you want to cover?
Any team in the world?
Yes.
The 94, I was a 49er fan, so I would say Joe Montana's, not 94.
I mean, I don't know if you have to pick a specific year.
Well,
but
I won a Super Bowl. So
okay,
80,
all right. I won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, 88, 89, 49ers, because Joe, the whole Joe Montana, Steve Young thing in 88 is the weirdest thing in the world to think about. Bill Walsh brought in someone to beat out Joe Montana. And they're both Hall of Famers. That'd have been fun. For Notre Dame, obviously, I would have liked the I'd have liked any part in that 88, 89, 90 range. Because they had so much talent. It was just fun to watch their the machinations. Clearly 88, because they won it, but that's not.
Yeah. Who do you have, Pete?
Let's see. I mean, from a fan's perspective, I'm a big Liverpool Football Club fan. If you follow me on Twitter, you'll see, like, why is he tweeting about soccer?
During football games.
In fact, Liverpool plays a match the day of the Clemson game, so I'll be tweeting about that in the morning. People are like, shut up. Yeah. It's kind of weird. The 1980 U.S. Olympic hockey team
would be pretty
awesome to cover. I mean, that's like all-time cultural type of stuff.
I didn't think quite in those terms. I mean, the 86 Bears with Ditka, although Ditka, had I been actually covering them, you know him and I would have gotten into some type of argument at some point, so that probably wouldn't have worked out well.
And it's not like you have a reputation of, you know, cantankerous relationships with defensive coordinators either.
Yeah, when you and Buddy Ryan had done, that'd have been great. Yeah.
Not at all. But I think that's, football-wise, I think that's what I would
choose.
I'm
assuming you mean the 85 Bears, right?
I said 86. Okay, I meant 85.
Well, if you want to get in a fight, it'd be the 86 Bears.
And outside of football...
how about the Bulls with Jordan?
That would be great, but nothing outside of Notre Dame football would top it for me other than the Cubs 2016 run. But what sane person would like to cover a 162-game schedule and then all the playoffs?
I cannot.
Can you imagine? I mean, when I don't know
Shout
about you guys,
Jay
like,
Stankovic,
but right? When I was young growing up and I knew I wanted to be a sports writer, and you think, man, that would be so awesome.
Well, my brother covered the Bulls. My brother covered the Bulls and Jordan and Notre Dame, but Tim knows my brother John.
I remember John.
But he covered the Bulls through the first three championships.
Wow.
And then his last year covering the Bulls is when Jordan retired the first time.
Oh, man.
So he wasn't back for the
NFL. That's a grind. That's just any way you look at it, it's a grind. At Irish Tie, expanded playoff, good or bad for Notre Dame? Obviously easier to make the playoffs, but it would be harder to actually win the national title.
Does he mean four?
No, he means expanding
to eight.
I wrote about today's Thursday Thoughts.
Good for Notre Dame, bad for my delicate sensibilities that doesn't want to see it?
I mean, I think it just depends on what the eight mean. Is it automatic berths for the Power 5 conferences and an automatic berth for the highest finishing?
You can't do, because then you're going to have three loss. Well, first of all.
That I don't want to see.
Yeah, I don't
saying,
either.
Like,
I agree.
That's a terrible idea.
I
like to reward the eight best teams.
Right.
Opposed to the five teams that won random assortments of conferences and then one really random team that happened to beat a bunch of FCF schools and, you know, win the American Athletic Conference.
I mean, it's good. It would be good for Notre Dame. It'd be good for every team because it'd give them more of an opportunity to make it.
Yeah, I mean, I think in that instance, yes. If it was only, you know, a situation where there were five or six automatic bids and two at-larges, it would be worse for Notre Dame. Because, I mean, think about watching championship Saturday and
you can't have automatic.
I'm just saying, like, for the sake of start, like Pittsburgh beats Clemson, Notre Dame gets knocked down a run,
right?
And then Georgia beat. Well, I guess maybe the Georgia thing wouldn't apply.
You still have to have a committee choosing the top eight for it to be right.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, there could have been a scenario where Notre Dame maybe gets left out because of what's happened on championship Saturday.
But here, okay, I wrote about this in Thursday Thoughts, and I don't like an 18 playoff because it just. A, it just makes it easier to get in the playoffs, and that's not what we need.
I like November.
Yes, the last weekend of the regular season.
It's awesome.
It's a terrible month.
It's the best. It's
the last
best
weekend
month
of
there
the
is.
Regular season is diminished then. You can't have that. And what we would have, okay, first of all, Central Florida without their quarterback would be playing Alabama. Wouldn't that be a hell of a game to watch? Here's the other thing. Washington, Penn State, LSU, who's the other team with three losses right there?
Florida.
They're all 9, 10, 11, 12.
I don't want to see any
of those teams.
So now we're going to, because obviously, as we saw this year with Georgia, a lot of people don't care about wins and losses. So now you're going to be making arguments for three lost teams in the playoffs. And I just don't think that that's in the best interest of college football. Not to mention the end of November, what you're talking about, yeah. Tim, conference championship games. It can't be an automatic berth. You can't do that.
I think if you had... I like the idea of an 18 playoff. It would have to be under a tear everything up set of circumstances where the conference championships games go away.
And what about the bowl games? How that impacts the bowl games in general?
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
I don't think.
Okay.
You know, and for the first round are on campuses.
During finals?
Yeah, you have finals.
For Notre Dame.
During finals.
For Notre Dame.
Okay, all right,
yeah.
But still.
That I don't like.
Okay.
That does not move the needle.
Right, not for, about, Notre, for Notre Dame, you don't
what
think?
What about the signing date? What about the early signing date?
I mean, what about
Saban has complained about it. It's been easy for Notre Dame, but it isn't. It's not easy for
712 things.
Not for Stanford. Not for Stanford, it isn't.
No, look, they get paid a lot of money. Brian Kelly's been on the road for the last 2 weeks. They haven't been really practicing for Clemson. Would it be harder? Yeah.
I'm just saying it's another factor added to it.
Dump the championship games. Play the first round that weekend. You would have had Notre Dame, Ohio State here. I think UCF, Alabama would have been bad. But I guess to go really big picture on this, I do think the 14 playoff has worked really, really well. For basically 4 of the 5 years, there's been a bunch of blowback on it this year because there were 3 undefeated teams from Power 5 conferences and back-to-back undefeated UCF. There was just a setup, and the Georgia dynamic with the double SEC. There were just a lot of dynamics that were unique to this year.
Right.
So, but if something works 4 out of 5 years, I don't think my reaction would be like, because it didn't work one of those times, let's blow the whole
but
thing up.
That's the world that we live in now, obviously. I totally agree.
Why didn't it work this year?
Because
the UCF,
Ohio
the
State has
team.
One loss.
Yeah.
Georgia appears to be
Georgia
a worthy two-loss team. I know. But they appear to be a worthy... I mean, you're asking why, and that's what...
Well, it's a lack
more
of
undefeated teams,
more
which
undefeated
really
teams.
Happens.
Notre Dame making it is a big problem nationally because it removes another conference from making it. I mean, I think it's a accumulation of lack of making the playoff for the Big Ten or the Pac-12.
As someone that grew up and covered college football when they weren't even matching up the two best teams, it was all strictly
still better than that, huh?
Right. I mean, it was conference tied to the to each of the major bowls. I mean, they weren't even close to it, and so that's why your point, Pete. It's worked 4 out of 5 years. That's a solution.
Yeah.
For college football, it's a solution because you can't – it's football. You can't play every other day. We've said this. Every other sport, you can play every day. You can't do that in football.
I think it's hard to play another game. I think it would have been hard for Notre Dame to play another game right after their 12th game.
I know.
Man, that was a grind.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're preparing for that
of course.
Entire
yeah,
year,
you probably need an FCS team.
You don't just, drop it on your
schedule.
Plus, to be fair, I stopped listening when we said 8 teams. But
okay.
ND Squid 23, outside of the playoff games, what are the 3 bowls you're most interested to watch and why?
I mean...
Different year this year.
The Rose Bowl, right?
I mean, that's number
Ohio
one
State,
for me.
Washington?
That's a great one.
That's first on the list. I am curious to see the level of disinterest in the Pinstripe Bowl between Miami and Wisconsin since they matched up in the Orange Bowl last year.
Oh! Yeah, but two much worse teams. They deserve to play each other.
I could be done with that game in about 2 minutes just to see who... Like, Miami and Yankee Stadium in December?
That's why...
We covered Miami and El Paso
in
December.
In every little pool I'm in, I'm going against Miami and Yankee Stadium
in
December.
And yet Wisconsin's not very good.
And the Peach Bowl would be the other one, just because, like, someone's going to lose and be so miserable for the next 9 months between Michigan and Florida.
That's what I thought. I really wanted Michigan to play, in terms of TV viewing and enjoyment. I know it wasn't going to work that way. I wanted to see Michigan play Georgia this year. I thought it'd be fun.
Ooh, yeah.
That was kind of the one game I thought would be. Or
I feel like they played Florida five times.
Yeah, that's
decade.
Too much. That's going to be a boring game.
Of course, you guys know how much I love bowl games and bowl pools and bowl picks and bowl.
Yeah. Don't mention Tulane.
I want to see LSU beat Central Florida by like 45.
Ooh, that's a good one.
That's what I want to see.
I think it'd be funny either way, actually, in that game. I could laugh both ways.
Florida Michigan's intriguing to me, but it's going to be really low scoring. And you know how, I mean, I can appreciate a good defensive low scoring game, but they also can be very ugly, right, too, and it's not a lot of fun. I think West Virginia Syracuse is fun. I know Will Greer's not playing.
The spread moves 7 points.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know. And that's why I like Syracuse there.
Texas, Georgia. It could be interesting if Georgia's not fully invested defensively in trying. They can't be that happy, Georgia, right now.
Yeah, although, yeah, it is the Sugar Bowl. And that is a point. I think NC State, Texas A&M, I don't know why. I just kind of want to say Ryan Finley.
I'm offended that Ryan Finley won conference quarterback first team over Trevor Lawrence. So.
Really?
Yeah, I don't like that.
You know, we started like five more games or four more games.
Just like one last one I throw in. This is because 6-6 versus 7-5 is kind of not really all that watchable. But Purdue Auburn.
That's what I wrote down. Purdue Auburn's
that's
cool.
A game that I would just watch.
Yeah, I hear
like
you.
If it happened in September,
I'm interested in Army Houston because I think Army's going to win that game.
Yeah, that's Armors. Do you see their? Oh, I sent you guys a text.
And Oliver's not playing.
1,600 yards. 1,600 yards from the fullback.
Army's fullback. Army's fullbacks have rushed for more than 1,600 yards.
That's
probably close to set. That was before.
The Navy game. Yeah, that's good times. Wash ND. When do you guys head down to Texas? How much access to players' practice will you have once you are there?
I get down on the 25th pretty late, and they practice on the 25th. There's like a 15-minute viewing period, which I will gladly not attend.
Well, you'll be on a plane. That's why you're not going to attend.
Well, no, I think I'll be at my house.
Oh, okay. close. Yeah.
So, and then, like, the access the next day is coaches, players on the 26th. 27th is media day. 28th, we get both head coaches in really one of the worst press conferences of the year.
Yeah, that's a rough one. The other two are really good, though. The 26th and 20th. The media day is awesome because we talk to anybody we want.
Yep. And no one can stop us.
We can even go talk to Sierra Wood after a year, which everybody did. Yes. As soon as we saw him, we made
just
a beeline
to him. I don't know about you. Well, I do know. We are not going to be on media day. I'm not talking to Drew Tranquil.
What? Why not?
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
What if they brought in Matthias Farley and Nick Martin?
I'm going to seek out Jerry Tillery because I'm sure he'll be a great interview at media day. No, we're going to talk to freshmen.
Right? Media day's fun. Yeah. That's a good time. That's the Bob Diaco story.
And I have to take exception. Don't you think Brian Kelly, Dabo Sweeney press conference is going to be kind
of
fun?
Are you thinking of Ed Orgeron last year?
No, I guess I'm... Jeez, that was bad. I'm thinking of more from like a usage of quotes standpoint.
No, I gotcha.
What are you going to say that has... Like, there might be some kibitzing that is funny, but... I'm just like the hay has been in the barn for a long time.
I think those are two pretty good personalities sticking. Yes. I hear what you're saying.
They'll be really good. I do have one funny memory from the first, from the Saban Kelly one the day
that
before.
That was good.
It was good, but that's because we walked in. That had been a long week too. That was a longer week because Christmas wasn't involved. So people all got down there early. Yeah. As we were sitting down, I remember Kelly looking over at me and mouthing the words, no questions, because he was so sick of answering questions, like thinking, let me find people I know and see if we can get out of here, like smiling. He's like, no questions. Yeah.
I think it was kind of successful. I remember a lot of out-of-town media questions that day and nobody on the beat.
All right, O'Malley's going to celebrate Christmas at home and go on the 26th. I, too, will be traveling the afternoon, evening of Christmas Day, and so we can be there for the first thing on the 26th.
By the way, we have access on the 18th to practice this week or next week. We should let people know that too. We have a little five.
What kind of access?
Like first five or six periods.
Really?
Yeah, it's right there in the email.
Practice report.
That's right.
All right. At Casey Reese, what does this team's practice schedule look like?
They're back at it Saturday, the 15th. They will be here through the 20th. There will be no classes. So, I mean, that's like pro football there, right? I mean, they've got them.
Yeah, next week.
They've got them for as much as they want,
this
meeting-wise.
Is today and tomorrow the wrap for finals?
Or yeah. Grades are due on the 15th.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, a good, just about a good solid week. They were going to disperse on the 21st, but it's now the 20th because they're leaving on the 23rd instead of the 24th. And then, when, you know, and I get that from Brian Kelly's perspective. You just want to get there and get settled in.
They'll have a practice week, like a regular one, when they're down there because the game's a Saturday. Right.
They'll have two solid weeks of practice coming up here beginning Saturday. So, I mean, sometimes people are like, well, are they going to get enough? They'll have plenty. They'll especially starting this Saturday through the 20th here, they're going to know everything they need to know about Clemson before they leave.
Well, as he pointed out, this isn't a bowl game where it's young guys running around and they're having, you're talking about CJ Procise as a freshman and he shows well and he could be good the next year. This is the first and second unit. I mean, they don't care which guys haven't played yet this year.
Yeah.
Shockingly. No, it's not a big deal.
Rightfully so. At D Baker 317, how would this defensive line be different had Jay Hayes not transferred?
It would be deeper. I mean, I think that Khalid Kareem was better than probably. I mean, I thought he'd be really good. I think he's been better than that. The notion that they would have rotated, I don't think is all that accurate. But, you know, at the beginning of the year, he would have taken the snaps that would have gone to Ade Odunbolu, which are about 200 for the year.
That many?
About halftime of the Michigan game. The coaches would have said, all right, we need you a three technique because Tagovailoa Mosa is out for the year. Yeah, and then he would have taken all those snaps.
That's where he would have helped them the most. And speaking of Khalid Kareem, I think that's a matchup advantage against Ankrum, Clemson's right tackle. When you're looking, you know, it's kind of hard to just look at it and say, oh, Notre Dame has an advantage over Clemson. This, to me, that's one of them right there. But, Pete, you're right. Jay Hayes probably would have been invaluable to them as a backup three technique.
And our 4-year quest on this podcast of moving Jay Hayes inside would have been realized.
Yeah.
That's
all that really matters. Tommy Kramer to guard.
We tried.
We did, man.
At her loyal son, if being a Notre Dame fan for the past 3 years has taught me anything, it is to be scared of big games. However, this year is different. I'm very confident because of Ian Book, Notre Dame can win this by double digits. Do you agree, or am I being a delusional homer?
Both. I think Notre Dame can win it, and to say Notre Dame is going to beat Clemson by double digits would
How are we imagining a double digit win over Clemson?
I mean, if Notre Dame leads by three going in the fourth quarter, Clemson drives, Notre Dame stops them and ices the game, but that's not a double digit win. You know what I mean? Like, that's how these, just like it wouldn't be a double digit Clemson other way.
I'm confident that Notre Dame can win this game. I'm not sure that I'm going to predict that when I have to, but I think they can play with this team. I know when I watch Clemson film, they're not short of any athletes.
I think double-digit win, when you're predicting a double-digit win, you think that one team is much better than the other one. And I don't know why you would predict Notre Dame to beat Clemson by double digits.
Stuff would have to occur in this game that has not occurred all year on both sides. I mean, for both teams, for Notre Dame to win by double digits. And I think for Clemson, if they just keep doing what they're doing, that they can win by double digits.
Clemson is 53-4 in their last 57 games.
With the coordinator group of Venable Scott and
Elliot.
Elliot. 54-4 going back to the bowl game in 2014. But maybe, I don't know if this Her Loyal Son is similar to a question that I got in my mailbag the other week about just like the big game fear and like, It was asked similar terms, like, am I being irrational? Because, like, I think that Notre Dame always, like, doesn't show in big games or, like, you know, plays poorly. But I think, you know, he's like Georgia, Florida State, Clemson.
They just haven't won those games.
Beating LSU, blowing out USC, blowing out Stanford. I mean, the only games that I would say that, you know, you'd look at Brian Kelly that were big games and they just weren't there were obviously Alabama and Miami. And then...
And Miami's the egregious one because
somewhat Ohio State.
There were some weird circumstances. They were so hurt.
Yeah.
They were really hurt.
And that's sort of it. I mean, I feel like they've...
USC 2011, but that was real early. Remember the buildup for that game?
Oh, yeah. It was bad.
But that was a long time
ago. On Ohio State, not to get on a tangent, the late Bob Elliott, who we all love, asked Matt Freeman and I pregame if we had eligibility left for defensive line. They were hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were busted up. Well, Her Loyal Son is confident and maintain that confidence.
I like the first part of it. You can win. They can win the game. Yeah.
At B. Simons 19, if you could heal one player for the upcoming Clemson game, who would it be? Sean Crawford or Alex Bars?
Good question.
Bars. I'd take Bars.
Oh, man.
Up front.
I want to say Bars, but I think it's probably Crawford.
I'd rather stop people from getting the backfield and throwing people around.
I don't know how much of a, like, it's not like if Bars was in there, Notre Dame was running for 250 yards, right?
No. I just, like, Bars was one of the best players on the team when he got hurt.
And, I hear what you're saying.
I want to add I'd pick Bars also. I want to add an offensive player to combat their defensive line. Notre Dame's defense has been good all year. I don't think we need to add another, having to choose between the two.
B. Simmons 19 says we do have to choose between the two. True. That was the point of the question. But you say both.
I say Bars. Okay. I say Bars. Did I say, is that what I actually just said?
I yelled both, I think.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Jesus. Bars. I'm picking Bars. Okay. I want to add another component to combat that defensive line.
At CJ Natchigal. How would you assess the job that Jeff Quinn has done in year one as the OL coach, considering the O-line has struggled at times, but he's faced the tall task of replacing Easton?
I think you and I are kind of on opposite sides here, Pete, based upon your comment about the offensive line. I think it was in the last podcast. I mean, you feel like they've been very inconsistent and they haven't been able to run the ball consistently enough. And
basically, I mean, I think that at the beginning of the year, there was, okay, they were going to take a step back from last season. The question was how far. They were the best offensive line in the country a year ago. I thought they needed to be a top 20 offensive line this year, and I think that they were. You know, do I think there's more material on this line than a top 20 offensive line? Yes. But I think overall it's done, I don't know, like, if you're going to grade the job that Jeff Quinn did, I'd probably say, like, I don't know, B?
Yeah, I would.
Feel good about a B?
I would.
My only thought is no huge problem with the offensive line this year. I just have a problem with the offensive line in the games they're now about to play. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it's fair to say, but I don't know that there's anything that Jeff Quinn really could have done about that.
No, that is not a Quinn assessment.
McGlinchey, Nelson Bars, seriously?
Right.
I mean, that is as extreme as it gets in loss of personnel from one year to the next.
That was not a Quinn statement by me. That was more of
I get it. Yeah. I think there's a lot of revisionist history with Harry Hiestand, especially now that he's gone, because there were a lot of times where Notre Dame's running game was inconsistent. Now, that may have had more to do with the play calling pre-Chip Long than Harry Hiestand's work with the offensive line. But, I mean, I think all things considered, those three guys that I mentioned, I think Quinn's done a pretty good job. I agree with you, Pete, that is there more talent there? Yeah, but Eichenberg is going to be a lot better next year and a year after. Haynesy's going to be a lot better next year and a year after. Kramer has two more years, right. And Banks is just getting started. So, I mean, I think there's a very realistic chance that even if Harry Hiestand had been the coach of this group, there would have been hits and misses along the way.
Yeah, I mean, they lost three starters. I mean, for the sake of comparison, they're allowing fewer tackles for loss and fewer sacks this year than last year.
Wow.
So figure that out. Jeff Quinn haters.
That's pretty good. That's a striking stat. At B. Tinkow, does Anna Hickey hate Notre Dame? Seriously, why does the media always bash Notre Dame for being proud of its history?
I will say in our column exchange, Anna Hickey said their favorite thing of covering Notre Dame was their tradition of standing behind the alma mater. So she likes their history. I think she likes Notre Dame for their history.
I believe she stood behind it and then booed.
She doesn't hate Notre Dame. That, when somebody writes a story that is... She doesn't hate Notre Dame.
Anna Hickey's Twitter picture is Notre Dame Stadium from the press box.
She should update that.
She should update that if you're listening, Anna. I would update that if I were you. But I think that it remains the fact. I mean, so that's... You look surprised by that.
I am surprised.
All right, well, she doesn't hate Notre Dame.
No, she doesn't
hate Notre Dame. Second part, why does the media always bash Notre Dame for being proud of its history? I don't think that's quite what...
Oh, you know what? I read that a little differently. Okay.
I guess I never get that vibe that's like the big criticism of Notre Dame. I don't think is like its tradition and history.
Okay, well, if you weren't a Notre Dame fan, I'm just saying that and Jen throwing that out to everybody. And the last time Notre Dame won a major bowl was 1993. How would you feel about Notre Dame beating its chest about its rich tradition?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I would probably bring that up.
Yeah. I understand Notre Dame history and tradition better than anybody in this room, longer anyway. But if you were on the other side, and they're an independent, I mean, wouldn't that piss you off if you cheered for a team that's in a conference and Notre Dame's an independent? They don't have to be in a conference.
I think the independence thing is, I'm going to say it's a legitimate complaint and people are going to take that the wrong way. But I mean that more as like, I understand why that drives people insane, the independence part. I think if everybody could be independent, they would.
I was going to say, I don't understand how people don't understand how Notre Dame can be independent, though. That drives me crazy, too. If you don't get why Notre Dame can be independent, it's hard for me to explain sports and economics to you.
I actually do get that because Notre Dame's independence goes well beyond football. And that's, I think, completely lost on people when the discussion of independence comes up. It quickly goes to media rights, and I'm just like, people.
Right. Today it's lost. It was understood at one point, but it's...
They lose money in media rights by being independents because it's so important culturally to the university beyond the football program. So, yeah, it's... I understand why the independence drives people insane, but I think this year is a good year to bitch about Notre Dame because it excluded probably the Big Ten. They knocked an entire conference out of the college football playoff.
Yeah, and they didn't have to play the 13th game.
Yeah.
At Rob Ebert, how many Notre Dame starters would actually start for Clemson, trying to gauge the talent differential? Mm.
Yeah, I was thinking about this last week. Yeah, what are your names?
Coney, Tranquil, Love, Mustafer, Gilman, Mack.
The way Jalen Elliott has played, I could make an argument for both safeties.
What about one defensive end? Because neither defensive tackle, one defensive end.
Yes. Jerry Tillery could play strong side defensive end instead of Austin Bryant.
I see what you're saying in that way, but
okay,
yeah,
that's the only I think conversation you could have about putting a Notre Dame defensive lineman.
Although, I mean, I think I could argue Kareem's better than Bryant.
Healthy Kareem, maybe. That's what I was looking at. But Tillery makes more sense if you want to do that. That's a talent thing.
Bryant is the worst of the four and projected as a second-round pick.
Is he projected as a second-round pick?
Yeah.
You could put Tillery. We could put Tillery's talent level ahead of his, though, if you're doing it. Sure. Because he's on the field is the point. That's an extra guy on the field. So that's good that they're all one side of the ball. No, it is. It's good. You can help. You can win one side of the ball. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
If you just disperse it evenly, it doesn't do you any good.
Mustafer over Falsinelli.
I think Matt could start at tight end. It's not a more of a commentary on Clemson's weakness.
They use a guy to block. They got Williams and
they
got number 44 and number 80
the receivers are a fun
block.
The receivers are fun matchups if you want to do it that way.
Receivers are really like Renfro and Fink are obviously very similar. You could really take Fink over Renfro, I guess, if you really wanted to.
Fink wouldn't go start at Clemson.
I don't think he
can.
But that's different.
I think Renfro's better than Fink. He's long. I don't know what his actual height is, but he's longer. He plays longer.
Feaster, Boykin.
But
we're pausing here, at least. You know what I mean? There's pausing here as opposed to just saying the names out loud and knowing.
I mean, it's like Boykin and Claypool, you could make a case there, but it's similar to the defensive line position, or maybe it's not, but just like the style of receiver Notre Dame has is completely different than the style of receiver Clemson has.
Now would Miles Boykin have gotten an opportunity over Justin Ross?
Because
Justin Ross is a true freshman. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, it's just like Justin Ross and T. Higgins clearly have incredible upside.
Let me say it again. Watch Clemson on film. No shortage of athletes on that team.
Yeah, no question about that. Let's see. Drew Brennan. Clemson's passing attack is going to pick on Troy Pride Jr. and whoever is playing nickel for Notre Dame. What can Notre Dame do to help in coverage there that they haven't done in the past?
People pick on nickel more than Troy. I mean, they will go after Troy Pride more than Julian Love, but I'm more concerned about a Nichols situation than Troy Pride. I think Troy Pride will acquit himself well.
I think the question is asked because Julian Love is so good, and so the natural assumption is that you try to pick on Troy Pride. I'm not sure that that necessarily works. I'm also not sure exactly what, you know, there are no tricks to this.
I don't think they're going to try
You got to cover well.
Yeah, I don't think they need to try to help Pride, I guess is my...
Oh, I agree with that. Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, and you're probably going to go with Nick Coleman. Maybe Houston Griffith gets incorporated again because of all the time that they've had. And I get that, athleticism. There's a reason why Clemson averages 45.4 points per game, and they put you in that, do we play base? Do we play nickel? They are a prolific offense, balanced. There are no easy answers on the defensive side of the ball for Notre Dame.
Yeah, I mean, just for context, Troy Pride will probably get thrown at 10-plus times. You know, he got thrown at 14 times against Vanderbilt, 16 times against USC. That's just what happens when you play in the field. And there's just a lot of space
there. And the boundaries in All-American, too.
Right.
It doubles up.
At MTFL Smitty, as full-time analyst covering the upcoming game, you benefit from objectivity and resources most fans can't enjoy. By halftime, good or bad, what do you think will be the most surprising to each team's fan base?
I think that for Notre Dame's fan base, the quality of Trevor Lawrence will be surprising, even though it shouldn't be. If you follow recruiting, maybe you just watch the Army All-American Bowl where he wasn't all that. But as somebody who's seen him in like at the opening, that he is like a once every 5 year quarterback, just the best guy.
Did you have an opportunity to speak with him during that
time? I have not. I sort of was around his dad a little bit. I mean, he just comes across as very normal. Which is, I think, difficult to do for kind of a number one all everything quarterback who everyone knew was number one all everything since I think he walked into high school. I think that will be a surprise for Notre Dame fans.
I'd say for Clemson fans, if it's a positive for Notre Dame fans, I think Notre Dame's pass rush will have a good day. I think Clemson fans will be surprised to see the let me put it this way. I think Notre Dame Clemson fans will be surprised to see the pressure put on Trevor Lawrence. It's all that matters is how he handles it.
I would agree with that, going back to my comment about Kareem against Ankrum, their right tackle. I'm not sure exactly. I mean, I think that would be my answer. That's the best answer that I can come up with. I know what I would be surprised by at halftime if I came up to you guys and said, man, Notre Dame's run the football well.
Yes, that would be the biggest
surprise. Guess I was looking for a shock from the opposing fans. But
that wasn't the question, but that's how I interpreted it. And so from that, I'm going to jump to a different question because it ties in. At Big Mac 24, anything to the rumor of Mitch Hyatt's injury? Mitch Hyatt, the veteran left tackle, four-year starter for Clemson.
Started 5 playoff games.
Yes, he started 5 playoff games. I know that he had stinger issues in November. He apparently was in a yellow jersey yesterday or recently. I don't know anything beyond the stinger stuff. I mean, certainly they could just be being cautious and resting him, and it's not going to play a factor in the game. That's an interesting matchup, Mitch Hyatt against Julian Okwara / Dalen Hayes.
Those are, I mean, especially when it's Okwara, those are...
Yeah, that's a great...
You guys are going to get paid to play football in the near future.
That's a great matchup.
Sorbic for Prez, over-under, ND defense 3.5 sacks, Clemson's offense having more than 5 plays for 45 yards. 5.5 plays.
Oh, like explosive type plays?
That's a lot of yards.
I feel pretty confident on the under for the second half of that, and... I'm going to go under on both.
I go under on both with a fair amount of pressures for Notre Dame because that's what they actually normally do.
I'd go under on both too. If Notre Dame gives up 6 plays of 45 yards, they're going to lose by 4 touchdowns.
They better have 9 sacks.
Yeah. at StuFish00, if you're Brian Kelly, what keeps you up most at night? 1, Dexter Lawrence. 2, Trevor Lawrence. Or 3, Clemson's playoff experience?
Christian Wilkins.
Tim and I are in agreement with this.
Christian Wilkins is actually number one.
Not Dexter Lawrence, Christian Wilkins. is more concerning. Well, of those two, well, and of all three, you can't do anything about their playoff experience. You just got to go play.
They have 48 players who have played in playoff games.
I saw that. That's incredible. Trevor Lawrence, more so than Dexter Lawrence for this question, because Trevor Lawrence is so far and away the best quarterback Notre Dame has played this year. That is what is going. Yeah. Pete was right. That's what's going to be shocking to everybody.
Dexter Lawrence is a big old hoss that you can't move. I don't know that he's going to make that many plays. He doesn't. I think he's. I mean, his sack total is fair. He doesn't make a lot of plays. You just can't move him.
I think Trevor Lawrence would be one for me. All right, Jeff Bordy. Remember the 16 tackles and butt kicking that Tavon Coney put on LSU in last year's bowl game after having a few weeks rest? If he has a recharged battery as he did last year, could he neutralize Clemson's run game?
One thing about that game, and he was outstanding. That was in the box game. It was perfectly tailor made for Tavon Coney, and I do think Tavon Coney's recharge battery is huge because he looked like he was tired. And then I think off the record, the coaches would very much admit he was tired at the end.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be. I don't think the matchup that you're talking about. I don't think it's just going to be that easy that he's healthy, so he's going to make 16 stops. I think it's a much more difficult matchup. We've run long. We got to roll. Thanks for joining us. We will be back Monday of next week for the next edition of Irish Illustrated Insider. Thanks for joining us.
Irish Illustrated Insider is brought to you by Anderson, Agostino & Keller, attorneys at law, with offices in South Bend, Indiana, serving the local community's legal needs with a diverse and innovative group of lawyers. Let their team be your edge on legal matters. Contact the lawyers at Anderson, Agostino & Keller at 574-288-1510 or visit their webpage at aaklaw.com.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.